This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Last month, Dr. Leonardo Trasande joined us to discuss his new book, Sicker, Fatter, Poor, The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. And we decided to bring him back to answer more of your questions and take your calls because we did not get to all of them. Dr. Trasande says electronics, furniture, cosmetics, aluminum cans, food packaging, so many of the products that we interact with every day are made with flame retardants, phthalates, bisphenols, and other toxic chemicals. And many of these chemicals are disrupting our body's hormones. And so joining us to talk about how we can avoid these chemicals and possibly even ban them, like so many are in Europe, we're joined by Dr. Leo Trasande, Associate Professor, Director of the Division of Environmental Pediatrics, and Vice Chair for Research in the Department of Pediatrics at NYU School of Medicine. Hi, Dr. Trasande. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, and thank you for rolling with us. We just wanted to add that segment here just because this news is changing so quickly. I do want to give out the phone number right away because we're not able to take everyone's call when you were on last time. So if you have any questions for Dr. Trasande about toxic chemicals, what we know about how they affect us now, and what it will take to ban them, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Trasande, since we had you on, a major verdict came down, which is getting international attention. A California jury ordered Monsanto to pay more than $2 billion to a couple who got cancer after using Roundup, the weed killer. I mean, this was a huge verdict. I just wonder what you think about this.
Well, it speaks to the consequences that can follow when chemicals are used in our daily lives without proper testing. We then operate in a system where we have to subject the population to a dangerous and unnatural experiment. And then when science catches up and identifies health concerns, often we're left with legal remedies as the major option for folks who've been exposed already to these chemicals in the absence of proactive screening of these chemicals or regulation to limit the chemicals of greatest concern. So the scope of the awards is monumental. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't comment about the various aspects of the awards and their decisions. But in general, I just would reinforce the fact that in the absence of a regulatory framework that proactively protects the public from these chemical exposures, we undergo this process of essentially being experimented with, and ultimately the only recourse for folks who've been exposed often is the court.
And I'm reading from The Guardian right now. The juries have repeatedly ruled that Roundup was defectively designed, that the company failed to warn consumers about the cancer risks, and that Monsanto acted negligently. The cases have uncovered internal Monsanto documents that plaintiffs' lawyers say reveal the ways in which the company has, quote, bullied scientists over the years and helped ghostwrite research defending the safety of glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup. And you write about this in your book. Can you tell us more about glyphosate?
So glyphosate is an herbicide that's used to kill weeds, and it's used together with genetically modified organism crops that are designed essentially to be resistant, in this case, to the herbicide. So the idea is you can kill the weeds by spraying without hurting the crop. And it's been used for a number of years in soy as well as a variety of common agricultural crops in the United States and globally. And we've seen now that the attractiveness of killing weeds has led it to be used in household uses for local gardens and such, not just for agricultural uses.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, since you were on the show, California officials announced plans to ban chlorpyrifos. This is the widely used toxic pesticide that has been linked to lower birth weight in newborns, which in turn has been linked to the development of cognitive and cardiovascular defects later in life. It causes terrible headaches, nausea, vomiting. You write about chlorpyrifos in your book, and we'll talk about the details and the timeline here about the national ban, and then EPA Scott Pruitt coming in saying that it's crucial for agriculture. Dr. Trasande, what do you think about California's decision to ban this pesticide?
Well, this is where federalism works on behalf of the public. The reality is that the EPA failed in its opportunity and its mission to protect health. There's substantial data, consistent human data as well as laboratory data, suggesting that organophosphate pesticides damage the developing brains of young children by inhibiting thyroid function during pregnancy. And thyroid is almost the growth hormone of the brain early in pregnancy, all the way through early life. We used to think it was just crude dysfunction of thyroid hormone, genetic mutations that led to a condition called congenital hypothyroidism that were the main concerns for kids and brain development. But now we know that even subtle shifts in the clinically normal range of thyroid hormone induced by chemicals such as chlorpyrifos and other organophosphate pesticides can have permanent and lifelong consequences for kids' brains. It's not just neuropsychological tests that identify changes in IQ. You can actually, from some studies, identify parts of the brain where there's not as much growth compared to less exposed kids. And that really adds amazing amount of strength to the evidence for action. So I fully support and endorse and applaud the steps by California as well as other states to limit use of this chemical.
And let's talk about what chlorpyrifos is used on. Dozens of crops here in California. We're talking about apples, almonds, broccoli, grapes, oranges. And as you write in your book, this chemical, chlorpyrifos, was banned from residential use in 2000. In 2016, the EPA banned the pesticide, saying that its harmful effects of children's brain development. And then Trump was elected. And on March 29th, 2017, then EPA head Scott Pruitt called it crucial to U.S. agriculture. And he denied a petition to ban all uses of chlorpyrifos because of the risks to women, children, and farm workers. And I was watching a video of farm workers who say that all of these memory losses and things happened to their kids, and they got their kids' hair tested. And in almost every case, the pesticide chlorpyrifos was at the very top of the list. So let's just take farm workers' kids as an example. Can you talk about just how a chemical like this enters the body? What is that process like?
Right. So it's not just dietary absorption from crops that have been sprayed, ultimately fruits and vegetables especially, that get into people's bodies that way. They're especially in agricultural settings, rural and other settings where crops are being grown, that these pesticides are sprayed. These chemicals are essentially released as a liquid, and those droplets can carry in the air such that they're inhaled as well as absorbed into the skin, even some distance away from the place where they're sprayed. I mean, the intention is to spray it directly onto the area where you're concerned about various unwanted critters, essentially interfering with crop growth. But the reality is that workers are especially disproportionately exposed, and workers bring home these chemicals on the bottoms of their shoes, on their clothing, and that can also track into the home. So there's another set of ways for families of folks who are working in the fields and toiling to bring home the fruit of their labors.
The Union for Concerned Scientists says that the full story of Dow Chemical's involvement in the EPA's decision, Scott Pruitt's decision, is still being uncovered. We do know that Dow gave $1 million to fund Trump's inaugural activities. And then Dow spent almost $14 million on lobbying in 2016. When Trump signed an executive order to create a federal agency task force to choose which regulations to roll back, the CEO of Dow, Andrew Liveris, was standing right behind Trump. When Trump signed it, he actually gave the pen to the CEO of Dow as a souvenir. You write about the very close relationship between government and these chemical giants. I mean, given what we know, we follow the money on the show on a regular basis. How can people try to turn this tide when you look at money in politics and how it's affecting, you know, not only this administration, but past?
Well, with recent news and events, it can seem quite depressing, and people might get the mistaken impression that I've lost hope. And it's actually quite the opposite. I've maintained substantial hope, and it comes from the stories and the power of people's wallets and pocketbooks and purses. So I hearken back to, and this was in the tail end of another Republican administration, the movement to ban BPA from baby bottles and sippy cups, which occurred about 10 years ago now. And essentially, it was not driven by the science. It was driven by public attention, media attention, and concern. And the baby bottle industry, as well as other key companies, got together and they took bisphenol A, or BPA, out of the linings of these baby bottles and sippy cups, because there were concerns at the time that have been affirmed that it's a synthetic estrogen, it can make fat cells bigger and have other effects on body mass, contributing to obesity. It's one of the prototype chemicals that can literally make us fatter. So what happened was that all of a sudden those companies ran to FDA and insisted on a ban of BPA from baby bottles and sippy cups. So literally, you can see the power of the consumer driving the change we seek. More recently, there are these Teflon-like chemicals, perfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, PFAS chemicals, that have gotten a lot of attention in the news because they're major water contaminants. They've been found in 43 states at levels that can affect human health, affecting tens of millions of people in the United States. But they're also used as a non-stick material in food packaging, including buffet-style food packaging. So it took a study of five food packages that precipitated an effort by two major supermarket chains to go to their upstream providers and insist on these chemicals being taken out of their products. And that was driven by consumer attention. And literally you saw it on Instagram and Facebook, even Twitter. And they shoved the old packaging aside. They sent it back or did whatever. I can't tell you what they exactly did in the end. That's for a reporter to follow up. But they replaced it with packaging free of perfluoroalkyl substances. So that speaks to the power of consumer action and how even companies that aren't making these chemicals or using them are aware and willing to push and force multiply the individual impact of the wallet or pocketbook or purse.
We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking today with Dr. Leonardo Trasande. He's associate professor and vice chair for research of the Department of Pediatrics at NYU and author of Sicker, Fatter, Poorer: The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are joined by Dr. Leonardo Trasande. He's out with a very important new book called Sicker, Fatter, Poorer: The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. Dr. Trasande is associate professor and vice chair for research of the Department of Pediatrics at NYU. And we had him on last month, and we could not get to all of your questions, so we decided to bring him back. So if you have any questions about chemicals, how you can avoid them, what it will take to ban them, because in Europe, so many chemicals are banned And they are not banned here in the United States. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. It's so important to arm yourself with information. So now's your chance to ask Dr. Trasande some of those questions you've been thinking about when you see names on labels, you hear stories in the media. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. A couple of questions. You're aware that in the state of California we have a Prop 65 that's been in effect for decades. And all that's required, if it's a known carcinogen or whatever, is to be listed on the, a grocery store has to put it out somewhere to display it. But we're being deluged every day with chemicals from diesel exhaust, cars, et cetera, that we don't have that kind of direct control over. And I'm wondering, you know, beyond the fact that it's listed, but that doesn't do much for us in terms of exposure. So that's one thing. I don't know how to get beyond that, because when I talk to my elected officials, it's just like talking to the wall. The Democrats in California don't want to go beyond Prop 65. Maybe there might be some chemicals that might be excluded, whatever, and I'm glad to hear about this. I guess it's glycophosphate or something like that. I'm glad to hear that that's being addressed. But I don't think lawsuits are going to eventually get to where we want to go. And I want to point out one other thing. You can even go to the farmers markets now, and you're still going to see hundreds of people using plastic bags, plastic containers. You just can't avoid this stuff. It's ubiquitous. So I really don't know what people can do. I mean, you can put pressure on your elected officials, but I just don't know how you get to the point where if it's a known carcinogen, hey, we're banning it. We're going to phase it out. It's not going to be just listed. We got to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Thank you, Greg. Dr. Trasande?
Sure. So I have a lot of hope through safe and simple steps you can take now while the regulations are catching up. I mean, Prop 65 is a major, it's not perfect, but it's a major piece of regulation that actually has inhibited companies from putting materials of chemicals of concern in their products in the first place. So that is stronger as a mechanism than it might appear at face value. But let's talk about avoiding exposures to the four chemical categories of greatest concern. So bisphenols are BPA, but also there are 40 of them now. There are these artists formerly known as BPA, like BPS, which is increasingly replacing BPA on those BPA-free aluminum cans. What little we know about BPS is it's as estrogenic as toxic to embryos and as persistent in the environment. So in general, I advise avoiding canned food consumption across the board. And the good news is a lot of companies are stepping up their game and switching to Tetra Paks or glass containers for these foods in the first place. And also, another source of bisphenol exposures that's even more straightforward to avoid in the first place is thermal paper receipts, those long, ungodly receipts that California has actually taken a step to limit through proposed legislation. I don't know where it stands. But more generally, if you say no to that thermal paper receipt, you're saying no to some bisphenol exposure that you get from that glossy layer on the thermal paper receipt that is literally it's bisphenol polymers that are used so that the print can literally be burned into the label. So as you absorb that on your skin, you literally absorb it right into your body, and through that subconscious hand-to-mouth behavior, you enhance your exposure to bisphenols. I'll just talk a little bit before pausing, because I don't want to take too long. I want to make sure folks get in for questions. Avoiding phthalate exposures, which is a chemical category of concern because it messes with the male sex hormone. It's also one of these obesogen chemicals categories, is more straightforward than it might appear. So microwaving plastic, for example, is a great way to enhance your exposure to chemicals commonly found in plastics, because when you heat the plastic, even if it's microwave safe, you're breaking down polymers into monomers and ultimately allowing those chemicals to get into food into the first place and into the body. There's also recycling numbers to watch out for. The numbers 3, 6, and 7 are found in a triangle, typically on the bottom of a bottle or other container. 3 is for phthalates, which we've talked already about the health effects. 6 is for styrene, a known carcinogen. And 7 are the bisphenols that we also talked about earlier. So I'll just pause there. We can talk more about avoiding exposures to pesticides and flame retardants as we go through some of the questions.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling in, Greg. Let's hear next from Amy in Berkeley. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for all of this information. It's amazing and valuable. I had one quick question about a pesticide that our neighbor uses that I'm sure comes over into our yard also, which is Preen Garden Weed Preventer. And the active ingredient in that is trifluralin. Also, it says treflin. I don't know if you know about this.
I'd have to get back to you offline with specific details. I'm not familiar with that on the fly, but let me use this as an opportunity just to talk about eating organic and a way to that as a way to limit pesticide exposures beyond the concern you're raising, which is important too. So 5 to 7 years ago, I wouldn't have advised families to eat organic as easily because of the price margins that typically we talk about with organic foods. But we've seen that plummet of late because there's been a 10% annual gain on a percentage basis in market share for organic foods, such that the big box stores are now putting this side by side with the conventional foods. And that really speaks to the price really coming down into the range where it's realistic. Also, there are a dirty dozen group of fruits and vegetables that are the fruits and vegetables of greatest concern that have the highest pesticide residues. As a quick way to think about this, it's the leafy greens and vegetables where you eat the outer layer as opposed to the ones where you peel off something before eating what's inside that are of greatest concern, because that's where the pesticide that's sprayed ultimately sits. But thanks for the question.
Dr. Trisande, there have been some really interesting studies coming out about the effects of organic food versus conventional foods. Can you talk about some of those? What stands out for you?
So the nutritional differences are negligible. Really, the benefit is in reducing exposure to pesticides of concern. Study after study, low-income and high-income populations have identified differences in levels of pesticide exposure, severe decreases in pesticide exposure when families switch from conventional to organic foods. And that's a benefit because pesticide exposures are known to inhibit thyroid function and have other consequences, including some studies suggesting increases in cancer risk.
Hmm. Well, thank you for calling in, Amy, and you can find information about Dr. Trisande if you'd like to follow up with him at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Mark in San Leandro. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Two things. I think that the solution is really right in front of us. The power is in the purse, as the doctor has repeated. So if you don't want it, don't buy it. Now, it's pretty hard sometimes to find out what's in things, but for instance, in cotton products, the USDA has a very strong organic guidelines that are enforceable and easily seen on products. The seal is on the product, and it guarantees that the land is chemical free, has been for at least 3 years. And, you know, just don't hurry. Take your time when you buy something. Figure out what's in it. Because that's what the capitalist system listens to in the end. And the doctors repeated that more than once. And I think it's very important and doable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Dr. Trisande?
Really appreciate the support and comment there. I don't have a lot to add specifically. I mean, I would also just add an example from the world of flame retardants. When California pulled back the requirement in 2013 to add flame retardant to furniture, There also came with it a labeling requirement, so companies had to document whether there was flame retardant added or not. And you saw through social media and other mechanisms that major furniture stores were being asked whether the furniture they were selling had flame retardants in it, in the upholstery, or not. And that really led to a shift above and beyond what the law did itself towards phasing out the use of these flame retardants in the upholstery.
In your chapter, Real Steps That Make a Difference, you write, "The science on flame retardants should not make you run to throw out all the furniture in your home. The good news is you can reduce your exposure to these chemicals right now through simple steps." So you say, replace old furniture that has exposed foam or cover it with a slip cover. Buy products made from natural fibers. Open the windows. Outdoor air has lower concentrations of flame retardants. And recirculating the air a couple of minutes every day gets rid of other chemical residues. Can you talk more about that?
Well, the reality is that it's not just brominated flame retardants that are chemicals of concern. So you're getting not just the benefit of reducing flame retardant exposures. There are other persistent organic pollutants that accumulate in household dust, be it from furniture as well as electronics and carpeting. And recirculating that air allows the outdoor air, which doesn't have as high a level of these chemicals, to swap out and literally remove the substantial amount of flame retardant and other chemicals that can accumulate over time.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Leonardo Trasande. He's out with a new book, Sicker, Fatter, Poorer: The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. And if you have any questions or comments for Dr. Trasande, we have about 10 or so minutes left. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Any questions at all about chemicals, how to avoid them and eventually ban them, you can also email your call at kalw.org. You were also talking about limiting phthalates earlier, Dr. Trasande, and you write that a recent study of young girls found that choosing personal care products that are labeled to be free of phthalates, parabens, triclosan and benzophenones can reduce personal exposure to possible endocrine disrupting chemicals by 27 to 44%.
Again, that speaks to the power of safe and simple steps that can provide immediate benefits. So you'll see decreases in levels of these chemicals within a few days. You might see changes in hormones in a few weeks. And then you might see changes in risks for chronic disease over the months that follow. And so there are short, medium, and long-term benefits to reducing these exposures and sticking with the safe and simple steps that neither need a PhD in chemistry nor have to break the bank.
And as you point out, there are incredible organizations that can help you with this. The Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and the Environmental Working Group, their website's amazing, but their database called Skin Deep also details what we know about ingredients in everyday personal care products, because when you think about it, we use a lot, toothpaste, soap, lotion, for example. There's ingredients in all of those. The other thing I wanted to note, when you were talking about your limit exposure to BPA, you write about a study asking people to eat canned soup multiple times a day. Their BPA levels shot up over 1,200%. Stopping canned food consumption can drastically decrease BPA levels in urine as much as 90% or more. So it's just fascinating to find out how quickly things change when you stop interacting with these chemicals.
And not all the benefits have to be just hormonal benefits, those natural signaling molecules that we use in for so many basic bodily functions: temperature, metabolism, salt, sugar, even sex. Reducing your exposure to phthalates from cosmetics might actually in the immediate term reduce your nasal and sinus irritation, because those chemicals are known to be induce allergic responses and have other consequences as well. We're not just talking, by the way, about lifestyle matters. Just to build on the point about BPA, for example, BPA in a number of studies of adults has actually found increases in coronary artery disease and cardiovascular risk. The phthalates in another study have been associated with decreases in testosterone. Low testosterone, which is quite common among adult men, is a marker for or predictor of adult cardiovascular disease and stroke. So often we talk about these chemicals as maybe inducing changes in fertility, maybe increasing body weight a little bit, shifting a few IQ points here and there, and people might let that go and say, well, these are minor things and they're in the range of factors that like genetics and diet and physical activity, they're important. But the reality is here, we're talking in some cases about life and death, that consequences of preventable exposures to these chemicals.
And Dr. Trasande, I mean, you are associate professor and vice chair for research of the Department of Pediatrics at NYU. Is a lot of this now common knowledge among the medical field? Because, you know, we've done a lot of shows with doctors who are fighting to ensure that there's more time spent on these issues, more time spent on things like diet and just how all this stuff affects our bodies. Is this becoming more common knowledge now?
Well, when I was training, the average medical student got between 1 and 3 years, 3 hours, excuse me, that's a bit of a Freudian slip, 3 hours of training in environmental health. That was less than the average coronary artery bypass procedure where I held retractors
Wow.
for 6 or so hours. So that tells you how little the conventional medical focus and in general preventive medicine focus gets attention. In medical school training, I would say it's better. We've got a long way to go. I myself have worked my way in to teach regularly entering medical students early on in their careers about environmental health to almost prime the pump, if you will, for their thinking about these kinds of preventive opportunities. But we so much focus on in medical school treatment of diseases when there are opportunities, substantial ones, to reduce healthcare costs. I mean, we're talking about with endocrine disrupting chemicals, chemicals that cost society $340 billion, that's billion with a B, each year. And that's based on less than 5% of endocrine disrupting chemicals, a subset of diseases due to the few chemicals we studied, and a subset of costs due to the few diseases due to the few chemicals that we were able to study. So this is an underestimate of an underestimate of an underestimate, yet it's an annual tax to the tune of 2% of our gross domestic product. So these are not trivial issues and really need to find their way in the medical curriculum even more. There's been a lot of progress on this front, but we have a long way to go.
Well, we have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy.
Hi there. Thank you. You know, my friend mentioned the other day that cilantro, the lovely herb, removes heavy metals from your body. And a long time ago, a friend of mine told me about something called colloidal silver, which also removes toxins. And another friend told me about, I forget what it was, but I could find him and ask him someday, something that you put in a bath, and, you know, when you finish taking the bath, the water is black from all the toxins that this stuff removed. So I wonder if the doctor knows some hints like that, things that can help remove things from your body.
Thank you, Judy.
Well, this is where we don't have a lot of opportunities through medication or treatments that are really effective. And often the medications that are out there that have been proposed to get rid of chemical exposures have consequences that are greater than the benefits. So the example with metals is typically chelation. You hear a lot of people suggesting chelation techniques. Really, it only works for high levels of lead exposure. At best, with consequence, and that's because the chelator itself is toxic to the developing brains of kids. So you have you can only use that with very high levels of lead exposure. They'll say 25 micrograms per deciliter, which is much higher than the average child today, which is who has a level of maybe 1 microgram per deciliter. So there are really strong limits, and there's a lot of marketing out there that is false advertising in the space to detox yourself from these exposures. The best way to detox yourself from these exposures is to limit the exposures going forward in the first place.
Well, Dr. Trasande, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us again to answer our listeners and questions, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Dr. Leonardo Trasande is author of Sicker, Fatter, Poorer: The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. And I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your calls. We're getting a lot of emails about organic food and the cost. So I will definitely write this down, and we will do a show about the cost of organic food in the near future. And if you want some more resources, not too many, because this can be overwhelming, you can head over to yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thank you for joining us.